Hello and what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mike of MTGA Wines. We're back to dive into, I think, kind of just a good recap of this year and the state of the wine business. We talked a lot about harvest in the last episode. We're going to get into a little bit more of the nuts and bolts this time around. Something that has been the most popular topic that we've talked about on the show this year. It's been the most covered topic in the industry just in general over the last probably 18 months or so has been this tumultuous, rocky time, or whatever you want to call it, correction, recession, whatever, that we find ourselves in. So that's what we're going to get into today. We're going to talk about just the current state of kind of where we're at. I'm going to give you, I think, my 36,000 foot view of it, why I think some businesses are in hot water right now, why some are doing fucking great, and why the new year is something to be optimistic about given those circumstances. So we're going to get into all that. Before we do, of course, we have a handful of announcements. First and foremost, thank you for liking, subscribing, continuing to download and listen to the show. Be sure to leave us a little review wherever you're consuming the podcast. Just a like, a comment, anything that you provide helps with the algorithm and getting it out and about. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks. At MTGA Wines is the handle. YouTube and Instagram are where we are the most active. You can also find us on the Book of Face, as well as the social network formerly known as Twitter. Check us out there. You can head to our website, mtgawines.com. There you can sign up for our newsletter, check out more information about our wines, our wine club. You can also submit topics to the show. If you go to that homepage, scroll down all the way to the bottom, there's a little email box form thing you can fill out. And if there are things you want to know more about when it comes to wine, hospitality, business, whatever the case is, send it our way. We'll try and answer it to the best of our ability here on the show during one of our episodes. All right, I think that's all we got. Very quick, easy announcements to get into. Now, this episode, we're making a quick adjustment. This is something I forgot to mention a couple weeks back when we started getting back into recording, was that we're going to start releasing episodes on the weekend. The reason for that has been just because of having a day job. Once again, helping out with or assisting with some of the family business at Anderson's Con Valley Vineyards and Ghost Horse Vineyards now. Just during the week, as I record this on a Thursday, go figure, it's tough for me to find time to do it. So we're going to start releasing on the weekends instead of Wednesdays. I know this has been kind of a morning commute or at the office or whatever kind of show for many of you to listen to. It is going to, you know, be available on the weekends moving forward. This one's getting released on a Thursday, December 18th, because I'm behind. I tried recording this episode. It sounded like shit. I was rambling. It was all over the place. I didn't have my wits about me. So I decided to re-record it, and here we are. So you're going to get this one here on Thursday. There's going to be another one coming for you this weekend. We'll play a little bit of catch-up before we get into the rest of the holiday season, as we're, you know, partially, I think, maybe more than halfway through Hanukkah now, and Christmas and New Year's on the horizon. We got a couple more episodes to bang out before we get into the new year. But that's going to be kind of the normal schedule now, that Sunday, Saturday or Sunday, just kind of depending on how the schedule shakes out, we're going to try and get it released over the weekend. That way you have something to look forward to, you know, while you're doing your chores around the house, the laundry, whatever the case it is, or as you're starting the work week, it'll be ready for you at that time. So just the natural ebb and flow of things. I am working out my new schedule here with some new responsibilities, you know. I am sipping on some tea. My voice has been a little raspy. I also just got done with a working lunch with a bunch of friends and colleagues where, you know, it was necessary to have a couple of bottles of wine and a burger and some fried chicken and all kinds of good stuff. So I'm going to try and keep it together. I realized how much of a mess recording this was a few days ago, and I'm now doing it. I'm like, man, this is a bad time, but I've got my bullet points. I think I'm going to stay focused and not ramble quite as much. I'll do the best I can. We'll see how it works out. I'm not going to record it again. This is like do or die time. I'm like, I already spent like an hour and a half trying to sort through all this. We're going to actually get it done this time. We're going to get it done well. Going to get it done right. So let's start with it. Yeah. Let's get into it. The current state of the wine business, right? Now, some of you might be just tuning in or relatively new to the show. There will be some of you that have been longtime listeners. I'll kind of sum it up for you just to make sure that we're on the same page. It's been tough, right? 2024 was arguably one of the tougher years that we've had since the 08 to 09, you know, or 11 recession, right? Since that time, though, 11 to basically 2022, 23, we've been growing like gangbusters. It's been just a beautiful golden era of growth within the wine industry, which has been fantastic. And now we've had a couple of really rocky years. And it's really interesting right now. From there have been a lot of articles over the last like 2 weeks. It hasn't been going on for a while. It's like new news. It really is. That things in the wine industry, the alcohol industry even in general, is not nearly as bad as people make it out to be. Which I wholeheartedly disagree with. I mean, you can look at the cost of doing business in this industry. You can look at friends of ours and people that have lost their jobs or places that have gone out of business and people that have closed up shop because it's no longer worth it. It doesn't make sense anymore. So it's been bad. It has been. There's no two ways around it. It just has been. So I don't think it's nearly, you know, it's not right to say that it's not as bad as we think it is to a certain extent, because in our orbit, and many of you know that I speak very anecdotally. I don't use a lot of, I try and look up articles and a little bit of research and here, there, and everywhere. This is one of those industries, though, where you really just have to have your ear to the ground. And kind of what you hear in your social circles with your cohort and your cohort and your colleagues, that seems to be kind of where the trends are. Because if you're on the front line, boots on the ground, doing the work, you understand it, you see it, you feel it, you experience it. And there are many businesses out there, because I've been a part of some of them, that simply don't pay attention to some of those signals. They don't hear what's actually going on because, you know, you're playing a game of telephone all the way up the food chain to upper management. And by the time it gets there and you have an actionable item, it's been a couple of months, weeks, whatever. And you're behind at that point by a lot, right? So the interesting thing about us and like our cohort and our friends and colleagues that we work with around, the guys I was having lunch with today, you know, some of them will say this, is that it's been tough. Money's tight. Sales are kind of down. Maybe they're up a little bit, but it's not enough to make up for the extravagant costs of doing business in this industry. That's certainly where we are. I'll give you a little bit more like actual dollars and cents on that here in a second, because I don't mind sharing it. But this happened back in February. This happened 10 months ago, where it seemed as though industry-wide, there was kind of this wave of not necessarily positivity, but like a relatively decent outlook on things, cautious optimism maybe, in feeling that, hey, if we survived 2024 and we're still in business right now, I think we can survive just about anything. That's kind of what it felt like. And within that cohort of ours, there are a lot of people right now that are doing pretty well. In fact, really well for themselves, given the current state of this wine economy that we're in. Right? We've heard, and some of you have probably heard the same if you have your ear to the ground or are reading articles or anything about the wine industry right now, if you're listening to other podcasts or following people on social media, that Gen Z's not drinking. The youngins have no interest in alcohol. There's a big health craze. People are cutting back like crazy. And sales are down. Volume is down. Things are imploding. And I, you know, to a certain extent, that is kind of happening. We've talked a lot about an oversupply here and not enough demand. I don't know hardly anything about the bourbon industry, but other than I love to drink it, is that it seems like bourbon's the one that's really like up a creek without a paddle because of how fast they had to grow to ramp up production to meet the demand of the craft cocktail scene and high-end bourbons out there. And now there's so much inventory, and with a little bit of a slowdown, everything gets bogged down. I literally, great example of this, I walked into Safeway the other day here in St. Helena. I walked into Safeway. I could have bought Blanton's by the six pack. I could have bought Midwinter Night's Dram from High West. I could have bought E.H. Taylor. All three of those. were just readily available in our Safeway of all places. So if that is any indication of where the bourbon world is right now, or the whiskey world is right now, you know, it makes sense that maybe certain segments of the alcohol industry, wine, of course, being one of those, you know, it's a little, times are a little tough right now. You're taking sales where you can get them because money in the bank right now is, cash is king, as they like to say, right? But what's interesting about where I think some of our friends are right now and where we are right now is that we're up on the year in terms of gross sales, which is nice. Net's down, which we'll get into that in a minute. But all things considered, we're having a pretty good sales year. In fact, there are good friends of ours in the same boat that, like, you know, based on the doom and gloom that a lot of other people are experiencing, it's almost like survivor's guilt. Like, we shouldn't be doing well. Like, we feel as though we should be in the negative. We should be in the red. The fact that we're ahead of where we were expecting to be doesn't make a lot of sense. And frankly, that's where we are. So I mentioned very quickly there, we'll talk a little dollars and cents, some numbers. Because this is how hard it was for us. Now, we're between Brittany and I, we're a very small family business. You know, 1,200 cases or less every year. In fact, our production's been a little bit less over the last couple of years, just adjusting for what we have in inventory and, you know, where things are sales-wise. So we've been making adjustments. In 2024, you know, we had to do a cash infusion into the business to keep it alive. We just had to. It was the way it was going to be. It's either we pay our bills or we don't. That was the thing. We ended up with about like a $40,000 shortfall in 2024, which sucks. We were able to get through it. As we got into the beginning of this year, we had a great start to 2025. We were able to kind of slowly dig ourselves out of that hole. We're still down, but all things considered, we survived and it felt good. This year, there's basically about like a $20,000 shortfall that we need to make up. So, you know, it's we don't need to make up all 60 all at once. I'm kind of looking at this. It's like a football game, right? If someone's got you by a touchdown and a field goal, you can't score twice in the same possession, right? It's going to take time. You're going to have to score once, get the ball back, march down, score again. And that's where I think a lot of people are in this industry after last year, is that if you're doing okay, that's where you are, I should say, is that you understand that, yep, we've operated in a bit of a deficit. Things are trending the right direction. Now we need to get the ball back and we need to go score again. That's kind of where we're at. And that might not happen in the next calendar year. It might happen in the next 2 to 3 years. It's going to take time. But if you're doing halfway decent, that seems to be where you're at. You know, business isn't a booming, but you're not folding either. That kind of seems to be, you know, the silver lining in what this industry is right now. And as always, I mean, there are always exceptions that we, you know, will say proves the rule or whatever. You know, I'm sure there are some people that are killing it. There are some people making, actually, we saw just earlier this week that Trinchero family bought Mum from Pernod Ricard, right? Over the last week. You know, there's still some M&A happening as we get towards the end of the year here. So, which actually, quite frankly, I mean, I wouldn't say this is the bottom of the market, but it's pretty close. So if you're looking to buy a winery, now's not a bad time. Although don't, just for the love of God, don't. Just let us do what we do. You don't want any part of this. I love you guys. You don't. Unless you're okay just losing boatloads of money. Like, seriously, it's one of those things. I kid, but I'm serious. You know what I mean? So it's the news that we're getting, you know, from the media and in the wine industry right now is very strange, because there has been just this immense wave of like doom and gloom. And over the last couple of weeks, it's been a little bit more like, no, alcohol sales are fine. And it's like, I don't think so. I will say, I mean, with any generational shift, you know, with Gen Z kind of coming online into their professional careers and being able to afford luxury goods like bottles of wine, yeah, there's a transition that happens. The same thing happened with us millennials. I was a part of those marketing teams trying to figure out, how do we hook the young kids? How do we get the next generation interested in wine? This is a conversation that's happened over and over again. This is nothing new. It takes time. Because realistically, if there's a kid out there as a part of Gen Z right now who can afford Napa Cab, they must be fucking rolling in it, killing it. Must be great at what they do, top 0.1% of their class kind of people. Because in my 20s, I couldn't afford a $120 bottle of wine. Period. Full stop. Not at all. Also, when I was in my 20s, I could still buy some Napa Cab for like 40 bucks, 45 bucks. Those days are gone, but we can reminisce, right? So the generational, like when people talk about the next generation, and I ignore it. That's the red herring of this conversation. It doesn't mean that you ignore the next generation, because they are truly the next generation of consumers. You need to learn how to meet them where they are and ensure that you get them interested in wine in a way that makes sense to them. You can't sit here back as a wine producer and expect them to come to you, right? This is something that the wine industry has been historically bad at, is meeting consumers where they are. This is something I've said many times over the last year, 18 months here on this show. The wine industry sucks at meeting people like yourselves where they are. I like to think there are some of us out there that have gotten better at it, but there's still more to do, right? Plain and simple. So the media is kind of casting this, whether it's the generational thing, whether it's this health craze and kind of this anti-alcohol movement that's been happening more recently. Sure, there's the expense of some wines right now. Let's face it, Napa wine right now is not cheap. It's not. And that's a bummer. Actually, a little bit of a tangent, because you know I love a good tangent here. Before we get into kind of like why, you know, I think some wine businesses are suffering out here. I got to write this down, because I'm going to lose my train of thought. So I got to type this in before I forget. Is the price per bottle of Napa wine. We get a lovely little recap from the Napa Valley Vintners here every once in a while. And there was some market research that was done. And they were kind of touting that the price per bottle for like Napa wine on average for like Napa Cab was somewhere around like 120 or 130 bucks. And that was like a big win. Like, hey, this is great. We're maintaining like price out in the market. And me, I look at that and I go, that doesn't mean anything to me. That's total marketing bullshit. Because if I could sell my wine for 40 bucks and make a living at it, I would. The reality is at 40 bucks a bottle, I'm losing money. So it doesn't work. We have to price it differently based on our cost of goods, labor, overhead, all the things, right? But if it was possible to make cheaper wine, I would. I think many people would. The reason that wines, I think why many wines are expensive in Napa is because it's fucking expensive to make these wines. It just is. This industry is not cheap to be a part of right now. It's more expensive than it ever has been. I mean, costs have gone up an incredible amount. I mentioned that I touch on this in kind of the dollars and cents of our own business. I mentioned the shortfall we had last year and the shortfall we're having this year. Based on gross sales right now, we're having the best year that we ever had. We're less profitable than we've ever been. Actually, that's not true. I was losing money for a long, long time on this business. We're still going to be in the red by a decent chunk this year, even though we're having the best gross sales year ever. What does that mean? Unfortunately, probably some price increases, because the price of our bottles and the expense of doing this business is not, you know, being covered by what we're selling. And that sucks. I don't want to raise my prices. I really don't. But when I look at our bank account and how much wine we've sold and where our numbers are, but where our expenses are, it's like, your hands are tied. Now, keep in mind, we're going to do our best to mitigate it as best as possible. We've been sourcing new bottles, different corks. We've redone our labels. Like, there's so much we've done to try and cut and mitigate costs. We're really trying hard. I promise you, many businesses are really trying hard to mitigate it as best they can. There are also plenty of businesses out there that have, you know, increase prices 25, 50, 100% or more in the last 5 years and are angry because they can't sell their wine, right? That's a little shitty, right? Which brings me to a seamless transition of why I think some wineries are suffering. And there are a couple of reasons that I think this is an issue for many. The first of which is what we were just talking about. Whether you've been in the business for a while and you're an established name, or you're new here, but especially if you're new here, if you're going big and going home with your price points right now and you have no pedigree, no list, no relationships in this industry, nobody cares anymore. The $100, $200, $300, $500 bottle of wine does not impress people much. We were talking about this at lunch today, and I concur wholeheartedly. We were talking about the Rattlesnake wine that's released by Barnett Vineyards. And I'm going to get this wrong. I want to say it's somewhere between $225 to $275 a bottle. Maybe it's $250, somewhere in that range. It is not a cheap bottle of wine. But it is a bottle of wine that punches way above its weight class. Way above its weight class. In terms of like quality to value versus other wines of that quality, it's a steal. Which, understandably, that could be hard to process, right? If you don't spend more than $25 on a bottle of wine, spending $250 sounds absolutely insane to people. It's that Seinfeld episode. Who pays $7 for a bottle of wine? We've all seen that Seinfeld episode. If you haven't, check it out. Right? It's all relative. But that was one of those, I mean, that's a wine that I think is like perennially, like it's sold out. You can't get it. Right? You gotta get on the wait list. And you might have to wait a while to get some or be offered some. And it's not because they're trying to be douchey about it. Like it's just we don't make enough of it. There's only so much of it that we can make and that we're going to make. So it sells out and them is the ropes. We do the same thing with our Cabernet Franc, some of our single barrel Merlot, stuff like that, where it's just like, yeah, it's once it's in, it's gone. It's just kind of how it works. It's not because we're trying to be awful about it, but we also, I think, you know, not to compare ourselves to a label like that, but we try and price it fairly, where it's like, we hope that, you know, when you buy our wines, you feel as though you're getting great value for the price, that the quality is better than the price indicates, right? And I think the reason why many are suffering in this industry, or one of the many reasons why some are suffering in this industry, is because the quality is fine, the price is a little fucked up, right? When you go from that $100, $120 to $175, to $225, to $325, to $500, but it's the same wine. And yeah, sure, costs have gone up. We've talked about this a lot. Price of grapes has gone up immensely. Price of dry goods, bottles, corks, labels, all that. Every cost of labor, everything has gone up immensely in the last 5 years. So naturally, there's going to be some price adjustments that have to happen due to the supply chain crisis, inflation, all that good stuff. It's just going to happen. It's a part of doing business. But when you're doubling or tripling your prices and all of a sudden you're on the phone yelling at distributors or restaurants or retail shops saying, hey, why the fuck aren't you picking up my wine? Why aren't you buying our wine? The writing's on the wall, man. It's a story that I've heard over and over again more recently of why people have been having a hard time selling wine is that they jacked up their prices way too far, way too fast. And it wasn't proportional to the expenses that they might have been incurring, right? Reason number two, which could be as big or bigger than reason number one. Granted, we are all price sensitive at a certain point, right? We all are. We all value the hard-earned money that we've brought in, and we want to spend it in a way that we see fit. We want it to make sense and find a value, right? We all want that. You know, $10 to me might be $10 to you. It might be $1 to you, right? It's all relative at a certain point. But the other thing from what I've seen and from who I've talked to in this industry is authenticity. And this has become a marketing term over the last maybe like 5, 7, 8 years of we want to be authentic. Oh God. I got excited. I knocked everything over on my computer. It's probably fine. It's probably fine. You guys, it's fine. Just please pause. Just put a little break for station identification here. There we go. We're back. Jesus, I'm a mess. Anyway, authenticity, I mean, it's a marketing buzzword right now. You know, there's a company I worked for a decent amount of time where that was kind of like our mantra. I think it was something along the line, and I'm probably going to screw this up, but it was something along the lines of like creating and sharing authentic experiences, which when I love this company I work for, it's one of those jobs I wish I didn't have to quit, but I just had to. It was time to go. And it was very amicable. At least in my mind it was. Hopefully it was on theirs. But it was kind of like hearing that was kind of like saying, oh, the cool kid is saying they're cool. Right? Cool people don't tell you they're cool. They just are. Right? They don't try to push it. They don't have to. They just are. They live it. They are it. People who are authentic, businesses that are authentic, just are. They don't have to push it. And I do think one of the biggest issues outside of price point maybe for Napa right now is that there are a lot of people here that simply aren't authentic. They're just not. They did really well in a prior career, lawyer, doctor, accountant, hedge fund guy, whatever. They love wine. We're passionate about wine. And we decided to go live our dream and buy a winery in Napa. And now we're producing some of the highest quality Cabernet from the most premier of vineyards. Insert marketing bullshit here speech. You've all heard it. You've been at tastings where people have tried to sell you that bullshit. And there's no soul. There's no there to that wine. The wine might be good. They hired ex-winemaker and vineyard manager, both very talented in their own right, not to disparage them in any way, shape, or form, but they also consult for 4 dozen other people here or more. It's a tale as old as time. This has been done. It's been rinsed. It's been repeated. It's not new. It's not exciting. It's certainly not authentic. And I truly believe that there are enough of those people in Napa specifically right now, in this, you know, 150 square mile at best or so valley of ours, that have that same story or a similar story that's close enough to it. And at least from the people I'm talking to, like that's who's feeling it more than most. Because for many of you, some of you have been listening for a while, you know this, is that, you know, we buy wine from our friends. People that we know, people that we've sat down, had lunch with, dinner with, that we hang out with on a regular basis, see around the valley, we purposefully support those that we actually care about. That's what matters to us. And if I might speak for some of you out there, I don't presume to know where your headspace is at, but I think that you're looking for something that actually means something. If I'm going to spend a good chunk of my hard-earned money on this luxury good called wine, I better like it, number one. Like, it better be good quality. Like, that kind of goes without saying. It better be good. But let's say it anyway. It better be of a reasonable price where I find good value in that wine. And number three, I better actually have some kind of like connection to it. Whether it's someone I met there, whether it's a vineyard that I love, a winemaker that I love, I had a great time at an event, you know, some sort of emotional tie, not just, hey, this rich guy or gal bought some land and hired all these fancy people, and now they're making wine, I should just buy it because reasons. That formula, whatever that was, you know, 15 years ago, doesn't work anymore. And actually, most people that use that method fail before they even get started. Now, some of those folks, it's a rounding error. It doesn't matter if the project loses money or not. They're doing just fine. They don't need the wine business to put a roof over their head and put food on the table like some of us do. That's not to disparage them in any way. It's just different, right? But I do think that more and more consumers, because I, as much as I am in the industry, I'm a wine consumer as well, that's what I look for. I look for businesses and people I can connect with across many, many facets, right? It matters to me. for the most part, what's in front of me. There needs to be some sort of emotional tie to it in order to for me to spend my hard-earned money on it. As much as like I'm wearing this Green Bay Packers hat right now. I don't know where it was made. I don't know how it was made. Made in China. Of course it was. Go figure. But I do love my Green Bay Packers. I love this hat because it's the blue and gold colors from back in the day. It looks cool. It's different. It's a team that I love. We have to play the Bears again this week. I'm not excited for it after we lost to the Broncos. I don't even want to talk about it. Don't want to talk about it. But there's an emotional tie to it through a lot of family and history and all these other things. One day I will own one share of the Green Bay Packers and I will have it framed on my wall. And I'm very excited for that day. Anyway, this brings me to, you know, why wineries are succeeding right now. And it's because they are authentic, but they're doing it the right way. It's not because they hired some marketing department to buy them ad space and get their wine rated and reviewed or whatever. They're doing it the right way by putting their boots on the ground, getting their wine in front of people, sharing their story, and being personable. That's what's working right now. And for the brands that I know that are killing it this year, when most businesses have no business doing just that because of how rough it has been, truly, the businesses that are truly doing all right now are the ones that are truly authentic, but they're not trying to prove it to anybody. They're just doing what they do best. They're out there. They're involved. They're fun to be around. The wine's delicious on top of that. And for the price, it punches above its weight class. Period. Now, those are a lot of, you know, a lot of different factors all crammed into one very short run-on sentence there. But I don't think it's any less true. I think success in this industry, and the longer I'm in it, the more it's just readily apparent. It's just the more you're present, the more you're involved. And if you're an owner that lives across the country, you look at your spreadsheets and go, oh, the wine business is down this week. I guess I should fly out there and have a meeting, and then I'll be back next quarter and we'll see how they're doing. If you're doing the absentee owner thing, and your business is successful right now, fucking congrats, because I think you're the exception. I really do. I really, really do. In the same light, I'm sure that there are plenty of mom and pop shops that do have that real kind of authenticity to them that are struggling right now. But for some of them that I know it's because they're not out there. They're not involved. They're not doing events. They're not on the road. They don't distribute any of their wines. They don't have a great wine club following. Like there's some combination of things, you know, when you pop the hood and look at the engine, you're like, oh, yeah, that's loose. That's not connected. That's low on fluid. And you're like, got it. Like there's a pretty easy like diagnostic check that you can do to see kind of where a wine business is at. And there, once you've been in it for a while, you know where, you know, the green flags are, the pink flags are, the red flags are, and certainly where there's smoke, there's fire. You can figure out when that's going to happen as well. So some are succeeding just because of, you know, doing the exact opposite, and they are acting in exact opposite to what those are suffering are doing. It's not to say that it's a hard and fast rule, I don't think. There are certainly brands out there that are not doing well that I wish were doing better. There are certainly brands out there that I can't stand that I'm like, I don't understand how they keep doing well. It's beyond me. But maybe those are just the exceptions that prove the rule. Maybe that's the case. So, you know, with all this, you know, hubbub and where everything is at. I mean, what are we looking at when we come to a 2026? As we wrap up a year where some people are still down, still struggling, some of us are treading water, and we're trying to figure out which way's up. You know, this is that moment where I'm like, I wish I had a crystal ball that I could just shake hard enough and it would tell me, but obviously we don't. I will give you this, is that this year started off pretty fast and furious. For the first 7 months of the year, it was a great start. And then it slowed down pretty dramatically. In fact, October is normally one of our like biggest months of the year. It was bad. As we were getting through most of October, I'm like, this is a problem. Like we are in some hot water. And then all of a sudden, November came around and December's been fine, and it's just been like boop, 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 like better. Coffers are not full by any means, but like I said, treading water is better than not. So we'll take it. We'll take it. So I think with some of the blips on the radar of, like, you know, positive growth this year, if you're doing some of those things, don't fix what's not broken. Continue doing what you're doing. And as long as you do stuff like that, 2026 should be a better than average year. It could quite possibly not, it could continue to be pretty bad for some, but for those that can continue to tread water, they should be fine. If it actually does start to bounce back, then we're into a whole new era of this industry. And we're going to be talking a lot about what's next, you know, as we go through 2026. If for some reason it goes gangbusters next year, none of us are going to know which way is up, because 2024 and 25 are just going to be too close in the rearview mirror. And we're going to be like, we just got hit by a bus. What do you mean we have to get up and run now, run a marathon? You know, that's what it's going to feel like. And we're already, you know, with some of the sales trips and stuff that we're planning, some of the fun things that we have kind of in our, you know, in the chamber, getting ready to go for next year, like, super excited, couldn't be more, you know, pumped to continue the momentum that we found this year. But it is going to be a grind. And truly, I do think that even if it is a positive year next year, the year after, it's going to be a very solid 2, if not 3 years before we're back to feeling like we're at in neutral again. Using the football analogy one more time, you can only score a touchdown in a possession. Most you're going to get is 8 points if you happen to get that 2-point conversion. So if you're down by 10, you're going to have to get the ball back and go score again if you want to win the game. Right? That is the reality of the wine industry right now, is that you're not going to be able to get it all back at once. But what you need to do is put your head down and grind and get the first score and then get a stop. And I think right now, for some of us, we got that first score. Now we have to get the stop. And then in 2027, we're going to have to score again. That seems to be the trajectory that we're on. Hopefully some of you are keeping up with the, football analogies where, you know, people are making playoff runs in the NFL. We got the college football playoffs, you know, I think really getting going this weekend. Exciting time. So it's fresh on my mind. I'm wearing my Green Bay Packers hat. I got to use a football analogy. Otherwise, what's the point of wearing this hat, right? God, I hope we beat the Bears this week. We beat them at home. If we lose to them at Soldier Field, I mean, they're really good right now. The Bears look great. We lost Micah Parsons. We lost our number one receiver. Someone else went down. Who was it? We're falling apart at the seams to close out this season. It's bad. It's like we're basically like the Niners last year. Like, our team's just falling apart, right? Just absolutely falling apart. Ugh, I'm so stressed. I don't like it. But it'll be fine. It's going to be fine. Just like next year, it'll all be fine. I think we've found some really bright spots to look at, to dial in, to capitalize on as an industry, and continue moving forward. What is beautiful, I will say this, like, whether it was lunch today, some of the other conversations that we've had as we've kind of wrapped up the harvest season, travel, getting back home for the holidays, everyone is very much in the same boat. And everyone is very much of the opinion that the more we can do to help each other, the better. Because if one of us fails, it kind of feels like we all fail. And when one of us succeeds, we all get pretty fucking excited about it. So whatever happens in 2026, I can tell you this, is that we're here for it. And just hold on to your butts. We'll see where it goes. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We're going to put a bow on it right there. Be sure to like, subscribe to the show wherever you consume your podcast. Leave us a rating or review, please. It will help with the algorithm and getting it out and about. Head to our website, mtgawines.com. Find out more about us. Join the mailing list. Find out more about our wine club. Please be 21 years of older, by the way. If you want to submit topics for the show, you can drop us a line, head to that homepage at mtgawines.com, scroll down to the bottom, there's that little email form that you can pop in ideas, thoughts, critiques, whatever you want to know more about the world of wine. We'll try and cover it while we're here. Follow us on all of our social networks. Again, we're most active on YouTube, the book of, or sorry, actually most active on, YouTube, Instagram. We also post stuff on the Book of Face, as well as the social network formerly known as Twitter, at MTGRWines is our handle for all those. We'll be back this weekend with another episode. We're going to double dip this week since I screwed up and had a shitty recording session over the weekend. And we'll get back on track here. Love you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day, week, evening, whatever the case is. And we'll see you next time here for the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.